First of all, thank you very much for inviting me to be here in this series of presentations. I will change a little bit the perspective from what being presented in the prior presentations, and you'll see right now what is it all about. I have no conflict of interest. So I'm gonna use the same study, but I'm interested on a slightly different issue here. It's not as much as the border versus the non-border effect. What I'm looking at is the role of immigration and the process of immigration in both countries, Mexico and the U.S., and how that will be or not related to what we are calling here the co-occurrence of alcohol and drug use. So for some of you not familiar with this kind of approach, this is the Mexican border population in the U.S. In the last 60 years, that being a huge increase since the 70s, and to peak around a little bit over 12 million people, Mexican-born people living in the U.S. And that makes about 10% of the Mexican population actually living in the U.S. according to the last figure. So one in every 10 Mexicans, they are not living in Mexico, but they are living in the U.S. Why should we care about co-occurrence of alcohol and drugs among immigrants in the U.S. and the sending countries? Well, there are several reasons. The first is, of course, that studies conducted in the U.S. suggest that U.S.-born Mexican-Americans have much higher risk for substance use and substance use disorders than Mexican-born immigrants. So there is this effect of the second generation that usually shows much higher rates than the first generation living in the U.S. The second thing is that there is a lot of stress related to the process of immigration, and we want to know if the stress is related to some of those changes that we see with the second generation. And then the immigration process itself, it's not just stress, but we have additional stress coming from the last decade in which there's been really a drug war in Mexico, and the enforcement in the border just changed very much. So besides the usual stress coming from the immigration process, you have also the stress coming from immigrating during a moment of drug war in one of those countries. Not go over on that. It's the same study that we saw before. It has been told that's a representative sample in those cities. Some of the interviews in the Mexico, of course, all interviews in Spanish, and in the U.S., people could choose the Spanish or English version of the interview. This is the border, U.S.-Mexico border. So do you have a pointer, Cheryl?
I do.
You can use the mouse.
Okay, all right,
arrow.
All right. Yeah. So this is the area that we use for the study, and those are the three sister cities that and the border, Laredo, Nuevo Laredo, and so on. And then we have a non-border city, Monterrey, here in Mexico, and San Antonio in the U.S. So we really try to focus on a much more specific area of the border than some prior studies that have been around. We saw this is a free group research, and the main goal for this particular presentation is whether the immigration pattern influenced the co-occurrence of alcohol and drug use and disorders for the Mexican population and the Mexican origin individuals in the U.S. So I'm not really talking here much on the border, non-border issue. It's just let's use this homogeneous population living in the border or near the border and study the immigration process and how that can be related to what we're calling here the co-occurrence of alcohol and drug use. So the independent variable, again, it's not anymore border or non-border. The independent variable is a five-level variable. And the baseline for this variable is Mexicans in Mexico without immigration experience. So on the Mexican side, we ask the people, have you ever been in the U.S. for work or study for a certain amount of time? So if they say yes, they've been interviewing in Mexico. So if they say yes, we are calling them return immigrants. If they say no, then we ask if they have a family member, immediate family member, who at this moment are living in the U.S. for work or study. And so these are Mexicans with a family member in the U.S. If you say no to both of those questions, then you are a Mexican without any immigrant experience. So that accounts for the first and second level of this variable. Then we have in the U.S. People of Mexican ancestry that they were Mexican-born people. So they are, you know, first wave of immigrants. Some people call that first generation. Then we have the fourth group is migrants from Mexico, where their parents, at least one of the parents, are Mexican-born. So that's the second generation. And then the further generation is people who they may have some Mexican origin background, but they born in the U.S. and their parents are also born in the U.S. The two outcomes that we are interested here is the hazardous alcohol use, as was defined before, 5 plus for men, 4 plus for women, and then we add to that any drug use. And drug use here is illicit or from medical prescription drugs, out of prescription, of course, in the last 12 months among drinkers. So you first, this is, as Cheryl told before, it's only among drinkers, and then among drinkers, whether you were or not a hazardous alcohol user, and if you use or not any drugs during the last 12 months. And then the second outcome is 12-month DSM-5 alcohol use disorder. And we weren't able to put the whole set of items to make a drug use disorder parallel to alcohol use disorder. So we only use two symptoms of drug use disorder, which were recurrent use in physical dangerous situations. This is the hazardous use, and then persistent desire or unsuccessful effort to cut down among drinkers. That is the quit control. So these are the co-occurrence of alcohol use disorder and two symptoms of drug use disorder. So the three main questions are, compared to people in the Mexican population without a migrant experience, so those are people interviewed in Mexico, they say they've never been in the U.S., they have no family members living in the U.S. This will give the baseline of what the co-occurrence of alcohol and drug use and drug use disorders are. Then we want to know if, the, compared to them, if those returned migrants and family of migrants, do they have a higher rate of co-occurrence, alcohol and drug use? Then the second question is if the current immigrants in the U.S., Mexican current immigrants in the U.S., compared to people who live in Mexico and has no immigrant experience, are those rates higher or not? And then if you are a U.S.-born person of Mexican ancestry, that's the second and third generation, compared to people in Mexico, are they on a risk for co-occurrence of alcohol and drugs? The there's no fancy thing here, really. It's a logistic model, but instead of modeling the odds ratio, we are modeling the prevalence ratios. But other than that, you know, it's a regular regression model. And the reference group for analysis is Mexicans with no migrant experience, again. Results. These are the prevalence for the first co-occurrence of drug use and hazardous alcohol use, and then in blue, the co-occurrence of alcohol use disorder and two symptoms of drug use disorders. And these are just 12-month prevalence of those two outcomes. And the first one, the first group is the Mexicans with no migrant experience. For example, less than 1% had this co-occurrence of alcohol use disorder and drug use disorder symptoms. And then as we move in this scale of immigration, it goes up to 6.6% for the U.S.-born second generation, 6.3% for the third generation. And same for the co-occurrence of hazardous alcohol use and any drug use during the last 12 months. It goes up from 4.8% to 24.4%. So using this regression model that takes into account some demographics and mobility variables that I will show later on what they are. So adjusting for those variables, those are the models that we got here. And if we start if we start with the co-occurrence of drug use and alcohol use disorder, that's an odds ratio of 4.1 for the returned migrants and families of migrants compared to people in Mexico without any immigration experience, and that goes up to 11 in the odds ratio for the third plus generation in the U.S. And a similar but not so steeper function we can see for the plain drug use and the hazardous alcohol use during the last 12 months. So as we move along in this continuum of immigration experience, the risk for co-occurrence of alcohol and drug use and the co-occurrence of disorders goes up. Those are, if we look for this, if we focus on this outcome, which is the co-occurrence of drug and alcohol use disorder, those are the variables that were present in the model that we used to estimate the prevalence ratios. And just to focus here in the border a little bit, just follow with the prior presentations. if you live in the border area, in those models, you are most 2 times more likely to show this co-occurrence of alcohol use disorder and symptoms of drug use disorders. And if you've been, for example, in the neighborhood country in the during the last 12 months, you are also more likely to have this co-occurrence. So there is something going on here. Yep. This is a border versus non-border, so yeah, combine both sides. So findings summary. Findings suggest large differences in the association of migration with both the co-occurrence of alcohol and drug use and the co-occurrence of alcohol use disorder and 2 symptoms of drug use disorder. They are, in general, consistent with what we think about the greater risk for co-occurrence of those substances with more intensive exposure to the American society. And that goes from the families of immigrants that remain in Mexico to the returned immigrants to the first generation of Mexican Americans. So what we are trying to show here is that the process of immigration has consequences that goes beyond just one nation. So it's not just a problem that's happening to the U.S. as people from Mexican origin move to the U.S. and that there could be some increase in the rates of those problems, but also for Mexico as people come back and show the problems as well. We don't think that there is a single factor that we can think that could explain those wide differences. It's more likely that for each of those populations that we are looking at, there are different factors and mechanisms that could explain those differences. The fact is that what is interesting about this project, I believe, I mean, a lot of things, of course, but it's that it's one of the first times that we can actually put together the whole spectrum of this population, both in the U.S. and Mexico, and try to study the mutual influences on both countries. What we had before, basically, there is another example, but basically is people in the U.S. doing the research with Mexican people that immigrate. We're doing the research in Mexico about the immigration process and people that come back. And now, for the first time, really, we have a more selected population, much more homogeneous. We are trying to look at these mutual influences because in this border area, really, there's a lot of comes and goings, and what we find in the border is really something very unique. And this, of course, if you want to keep in this line, this will call for much more complex research scientists. Actually just a cross-sectional research, so we're going to need to do something much more complex, and this will call for much more intense collaboration between researchers in the U.S. and Mexico. That's it. Thank you. Yes, we do have some data on income. The problem, as usual, is that a lot of people, they don't like to say how much they earn. So there is a fair amount of missing data, about 10%. So in those models, we are using education as a proxy, just because it's a much more complex data set. But when we use both in some of those models, that doesn't make a lot of difference, but you can look at changes in education and income as people move along the border. Yeah, you can do that. Yes, ma'am.
Similar,
Like this one?
That one they had the three research
groups. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. This is not complete. There is a the Cheryl and Tom, they showed the full list of people. Well, not the full list, actually. There are some people missing, but you know, there's a lot of people in the process. So anyway, the income again. Yes, we try to control for income in those models. Martin look at income per se. I mean, as you know, one of the main variables. But there are a lot, as you say, and been said before here, there are a lot of disparities between those cities, both in the U.S. and Mexico, and they don't go necessarily in the same direction, border and non-border, on income. So one of the things that we are doing now is we can actually map those interviews, like in zip codes, and at least in Mexico, we can have for those zip codes some measure of income and social disparities. So we are looking at a two-level model to see if those disparities per se, they are associated with those rates of alcohol use disorder up to the moment. And they are. I mean, there is a community level effect on those socioeconomical disparities that help to explain some of these differences in the prevalences.
Yeah. And she asked about compensation.
Oh, compensation, yes. Yeah. You want to say something?
In the U.S., you pay $125 in the form of a gift card. I don't think you...
No, we didn't.
I think our intent was that we needed money for everything.
Yeah.
Including stolen computers.
Yeah, it's you know, it's much more common in the U.S. to have compensation for people to actually provide an interview. That's not usually the practice in Mexico. So they did in the U.S. We didn't do in Mexico.
Any other questions for Dee or for anybody?
No,
I
know what you mean. For example, here in this this prevalence rate of 9.9 against 11.3 or 5.4 against 5.7.
Right.
No, we didn't actually test for that in this particular regression equation. And I would bet they are not.
I'm sort of curious about also what theoretically was behind, if they were significantly different, you know, what would be the differences between second and third generation in terms of risk factors that would...
Yeah, I think people are interested. There is this huge effect of people born in the U.S. against people born in Mexico, and some people are interested to figure out where actually occurs this difference. So there is this second and third generation issue. And then there are people just saying that, you know, the more time you spend in the U.S., the more likely you are to show some of those outcomes. So.
Yeah.